Welcome to the July 15th edition of the TIFF Podcast Intelligence Brief. I'm Guy.
And I'm Ava. Today we have 8 newly published episodes, all inside the strict 24-hour window, and all 8 have usable episode-level transcripts. The central question is simple. Where is the market still willing to pay for artificial intelligence, and where is it starting to demand proof?
The answer from today's set is increasingly clear. Investors are separating the physical AI bottleneck trade compute, memory, networking, power and cooling from the narrative trade, where an incumbent software or services company says it is exposed to AI but has not yet changed its growth rate.
We'll connect that split to IBM, the semiconductor and memory complex, Mike Wilson's broadening thesis, the economics of space, generative music, AI governance, and one practical lesson for managing your own portfolio. Let us start with the market framework.
Our source is Morgan Stanley's thoughts on the market, in an episode titled What is Fueling Stocks After the AI Trade, with Chief U.S. Equity Strategist Mike Wilson. Wilson says the broadening trade is now visible in stock prices, relative performance, and earnings revisions.
His mechanism is operating leverage. Wilson believes the economy finished a rolling recession in April of 2025 and entered a new expansion. During the weak period, companies cut costs. When revenue growth returns to those leaner cost structures, earnings can grow faster than sales. That is how areas outside the most obvious AI beneficiaries can begin to outperform without the AI cycle ending.
That distinction matters. Wilson is not saying artificial intelligence is over. He is saying the rate of change in the most crowded semiconductor and memory trades has become difficult to sustain. Strong stories can still correct when revision breadth is near historical extremes, positioning is crowded and the upside hurdle is very high.
Wilson also points to a useful internal divergence. Hyperscalers spend the capital, while semiconductor companies receive much of it. When the spenders begin to lag the beneficiaries, the market should ask whether management teams will moderate the pace of spending. Stock prices and credit spreads provide feedback. If the hyperscalers' cost of capital rises while investors question utilization, capital discipline can arrive faster than the long-term demand story implies.
Wilson cites Meta's move to sell excess capacity as a reason to ask harder questions about the path and pace of spending. The interpretation in the written brief is cautious. This is not proof the AI capital expenditure cycle has ended. It is evidence that utilization and return on invested capital are becoming part of the debate.
Wilson's preferred broadening areas are consumer discretionary goods, transports, and biotech. The practical instruction is not to chase momentum. Add risk on down days in areas with improving earnings and operating leverage. But he gives 2 clear falsification conditions: renewed oil disruption and persistent increases in nominal and real interest rate volatility. Either one can tighten conditions enough to damage both the index and the broadening beneficiaries.
Now let us connect that framework to the most directly relevant technology episode. Our source is TBPN, in IBM's AI rollercoaster, Demi's calls for AI watchdog, and New York pauses AI data centers. The hosts use IBM's sharp drawdown to argue that the market is separating infrastructure exposure from AI-adjacent storytelling.
Their most useful phrase is the token path. When a model produces and moves tokens, spending is visible in accelerators, high bandwidth memory, networking, data centers, electricity, and cooling. The TBPN host's argument is that IBM may have enterprise relationships and an AI product story, but it does not currently collect the most direct toll on that physical path.
That turns IBM into a broader test for legacy enterprise vendors. The market no longer needs another AI announcement. It needs measurable evidence in revenue mix, bookings, margins, or free cash flow. If those variables accelerate, the narrative can repair. If they do not, the AI label alone cannot support the multiple.
One nuance from today's live market work is important. IBM remains weak, but the hardware basket can also sell off sharply. So IBM weakness does not mechanically mean money must rotate into memory and servers every session. The structural preference for the physical bottleneck layer can coexist with a violent positioning unwind in that same layer.
TBPN also discusses Demis Hassabis calling for AI oversight and a New York pause affecting data center development. Those items reinforce the same investment point from another direction. Regulation, permitting, and power access are no longer background considerations. They can determine how quickly revenue converts from demand into deployed capacity.
Our next source is the A16Z podcast. Can anyone catch NVIDIA? The future of chips and infrastructure. The transcript is a panel with Jensen Huang and Elon Musk at a Saudi-US forum. Huang describes accelerated computing as a foundational architecture shift, not merely a temporary boom in model training.
Huang argues that general-purpose processors have lost share in the world as top supercomputers while accelerated computing has gained it. His point is that the economic base extends beyond chatbots. Large amounts of cloud spending already go to data processing, recommendations, and other compute-intensive workloads. Generative and agentic AI add a new demand layer on top of that transition.
That is the strongest answer in the episode to the question of NVIDIA's durability. The moat is not only the chip. It is an architecture, a software environment, and an ecosystem built around accelerated workloads. For a competitor to catch NVIDIA, it must offer compelling total economics at scale, including software, networking, availability, and developer adoption, not just a benchmark result.
The same A16Z transcript puts power and cooling at the center of the next phase. The panel discusses AI factories, very large Saudi data center projects, robotics, and digital twins. Musk then extends the constraint logic into space. He argues that if compute demand reaches hundreds of gigawatts, terrestrial electricity generation and cooling become binding.
Musk estimates that continuous solar, space-based AI compute could become lowest cost within roughly 4 to 5 years. That timing is a speaker forecast, not an established base case. But the mechanism is useful now. As rack density and total demand rise, value can migrate toward grid interconnection, power generation, cooling, memory, and networking. The investable insight does not require orbital data centers to arrive on schedule.
The falsification test is utilization. If hyperscaler capital expenditure slows, if competing accelerators gain meaningful scale, or if efficiency improvements reduce load faster than demand grows, the physical bottleneck thesis weakens. Until then, the architecture shift remains a strong structural support, even when the stocks correct.
Let us move from terrestrial infrastructure to the space economy. Our source is Goldman Sachs Exchanges, how falling launch costs and AI are driving the space economy. The exact YouTube episode transcript describes how cheaper access to orbit, expanding satellite constellations, and better data analysis can move space beyond a launch market.
Reusable rockets improve cadence and lower replacement cost. That makes smaller satellites and more iterative constellations economically possible. But launch is only the first step. The more important value may accrue to persistent communications, Earth observation, analytics, and mission services, especially when AI makes raw imagery and sensor output useful at commercial scale.
This is a classic value chain migration. As the cost of producing or accessing a raw input falls, returns can move downstream to differentiated data, distribution, and recurring services. A launch provider may grow volume without earning attractive returns if competition compresses pricing. A data provider may create durable economics if it owns a unique dataset and embeds it in customer workflows.
Goldman's discussion also highlights the constraints: orbital debris, spectrum, insurance, export controls, and regulation. Lower launch costs can increase congestion. The underwriting question is therefore not simply whether more objects go into orbit. It is whether end customers pay enough for the service after replenishment, launch, and compliance costs.
The falsification condition is straightforward. If launch costs fall but utilization and willingness to pay do not rise, the space economy can expand physically without generating good equity returns. Investors should separate recurring service revenue from headline launch counts.
Our next source is the indicator from Planet Money, why your neighbor might be paying less for their car. It contains three listener questions that look unrelated but share a measurement lesson.
The first asks how to measure diversification in Gulf economies. The transcript says no single number is enough. Non-oil gross domestic product can include petrochemical activity. Non-oil exports provide cleaner goods data, but miss tourism and financial services. Government revenue shows fiscal dependence, but it can remain oil-heavy even when private activity diversifies.
The correct approach is triangulation: output, trade, and government revenue together. That is also a useful investment habit. A management team can choose the metric that flatters its story. A robust thesis checks several independent measures and asks whether they converge.
The second question concerns U.S. soybeans. According to the indicator transcript, acreage fell after China stopped buying during the trade conflict, while corn acreage increased. China later resumed large soybean purchases, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture expected record soybean production. High nitrogen fertilizer prices also made soybeans relatively more attractive than corn.
The mechanism is important. Crop mix responds not only to the selling price but also to relative input costs. A trade demand recovery can coincide with a fertilizer shock that changes planting incentives. The falsifiers are renewed Chinese disruption or a fertilizer price reversal that restores corn's relative economics.
The third listener asks why a neighbor paid less for a car. The transcript says dealer fees are not standardized. Documentation fees and other charges vary by state and dealership. The episode cites an average Florida documentation fee of $913 and notes that most states do not cap these fees.
This is a small but relevant inflation lesson. The sticker price can appear stable while the all-in consumer price rises through fees. Analysts looking at affordability should track the complete transaction, not only the advertised price.
Now to generative content. Our source is The Vergecast, The Problem with Suno and AI Music. The episode examines what happens when the cost and time required to create music collapse.
Suno can dramatically expand content supply. But abundance is not the same as economic value. If creation becomes nearly free, discovery, provenance, licensing, and trusted curation become more important. Streaming platforms may gain engagement while also inheriting moderation costs, catalog spam, and difficult royalty allocation problems.
The central economic tension is that production costs are falling faster than rights infrastructure is adapting. That can compress the value of undifferentiated catalogs. On the other hand, rights owners with clean metadata, recognizable artists, and negotiating leverage may become more valuable because they can prove provenance and license usage.
The falsification condition is a workable licensing system that preserves consumer preference and royalty pools for premium human catalogs. If platforms and rights holders reach enforceable agreements, AI music may become an expanding format rather than a destructive substitute.
Our governance segment comes from the big technology podcast, AI pioneer Jürgen Schmidt-Huber. AI already feels pain, loves, and is self-aware. This episode used a locally generated whisper transcript.
Schmidt-Huber discusses pain as a reinforcement signal, machine self-models, and whether functional analogs to emotion or self-awareness already exist. The written brief treats these as conceptual claims. They are not evidence that current systems possess human subjective experience.
The practical investment implication is limited in the short term, but relevant to regulation and liability. Systems with persistent objectives can be evaluated through behavior, incentives, and failure modes without relying on anthropomorphic labels. For companies, the material questions are monitoring, control, auditability, and legal responsibility.
Finally, our source's masters in business, when should do-it-yourself investors fire themselves? The episode argues that delegation can make sense when taxes, estate complexity, behavioral errors, aging, or time constraints create more value leakage than in advisor costs.
The best point is that advisor value should not be judged only by whether someone picks better stocks. Process continuity, tax implementation, risk control, and protection from emotional decisions can matter more than gross security selection alpha. A disciplined investor with a simple balance sheet and adequate estate and tax planning may still be better off with a low-cost do-it-yourself approach.
So let us close with the integrated signal map. First, AI leadership is narrowing toward measurable physical bottlenecks. TBPN's Token Path Framework and a 16ZS accelerated computing discussion both support memory, networking, power, cooling, and scaled compute. The thesis is falsified if application and software earnings revisions sustainably outgrow infrastructure for several quarters.
Second, broadening can happen without ending the AI cycle. Wilson's operating leverage argument supports selective transports, consumer discretionary goods, and biotech. It fails if oil and real yields rise while broad earnings revisions roll over.
Third, power is becoming a valuation variable. Data center pauses, interconnection delays, and cooling constraints affect the speed at which demand becomes revenue. Efficiency can soften the constraint, but only if it improves faster than total compute demand grows.
Fourth, falling production and access costs shift value downstream. In space, the beneficiaries may be data and recurring services. In AI music, they may be rights, curation, and distribution. Cheap supply is not itself a moat.
Today's watch list is therefore 5 items. Watch IBM and enterprise software for proof of monetization. Watch hyperscaler equities and credit together for capital discipline signals. Watch real yields in oil as the broadening falsifiers. watch power and permitting as AI capacity constraints. And in space, watch unit economics not launch counts alone.
The portfolio conclusion is disciplined rather than dramatic. Do not confuse a correction in semiconductors or memory with the end of AI, but do not chase a crowded trade simply because the long-term story remains good. Add where revisions, valuation, and physical exposure align. Demand measurable revenue and margins from AI-adjacent incumbents. And keep the falsification conditions visible.
One final process point ties the entire episode together. Each source describes a falling cost somewhere in the system, lower launch cost, cheaper content creation, more efficient accelerated computing, or lower friction in producing intelligence. Falling cost expands demand, but it rarely tells us by itself who earns the return. The return goes to the scarce complement.
In AI infrastructure, that scarce complement may be power, memory bandwidth, networking, permitting, or trusted software integration. In space, it may be differentiated data and recurring customer workflows. In music, it may be rights, identity, and curation. In portfolio management, it may be judgment and behavioral discipline. That is the cross-source analytical lens to carry forward.
When you evaluate the next AI claim, ask three questions. Where does the marginal dollar physically flow? Which part of the system remains scarce after supply expands? And what evidence would prove that the company actually captures the economics? Those questions are more durable than any single day's price action. That's the July 15th TIFF Podcast Intelligence Brief. The written edition in Obsidian includes the episode-by-episode analysis, source provenance, and the full signal map.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back with the next verified 24-hour intelligence window.